Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Imprint Companion in 2024. And we are talking the biggest behemoth of a batch that landed for everyone in December of 2023. I am one of your disc spinning hosts, Blake Howard. And here with me is my brother in all things physical media. It's the legendary Alexi Toliopoulos. Lex, it's so good to be back talking movies with you. Talking physical media. We haven't even started recording this show because we've been excitedly showing each other Christmas purchases. So it's so good to have a chat with you again about all things disc. And we've got a banger today talking about one of the best releases from Imprint.
It's crazy, Blake. This bundle, my cup overfloweth, my darling. That's all I can say. This is such an insane bundle. Yeah. It's taken us even longer than usual to get through it all. But I think we've done a good job putting a big dent in it because it is packed of movies. My estimation is there's over like a dozen movies this week.
Yeah,
there's over like, a dozen movies.
There's at least like 15, 16 movies, and that's not including some of the docos that are included on some of the discs. So yeah, you're probably talking close to 20 movies in this batch. You've got 7 Lumet films, even though one of them isn't in the box set that we're talking about today. But let's, before we talk about the entire December batch over the next couple of episodes you're going to listen to, this first episode exclusively is going to feature the directed by Sidney Lumet Volume 1 films from 1964 to 73. It's number 280 to 285 on the spine numbers of the Imprint collection. It features The Pawnbroker, The Group, The Deadly Affair, Child's Play, The Offense, and like one of the seminal movies of the 1970s. In fact, Lex is sitting in front of a poster of it in his home right now. Mm-hmm. It is Serpico with Al Pacino. Attica!
Whoa, that's Dog Day Afternoon, brother. Break it to you.
No, it's Attica, right? It's Attica. That's what it is, yeah?
No, Dog Day Afternoon, bro.
No, I've
please.
Seen this. I've seen this. Hold on, wait. Hoo-ha! Hoo-ha! Is that the one?
No. Oh, my God. My brain is melting. I can't handle this kind of stuff. But yes, I adore Serpico. An all-time favorite of mine. And we've talked about Sidney Lumet a few times on this podcast.
Yeah.
There's been a few other Imprint releases. I remember in our early episodes, Night Falls on Manhattan, one of my favorite discoveries of the last few years was an Imprint release. But this box has a few other surprises in store for me too. Off the top of my head, the only one I had seen before was Serpico.
Agree.
In this box that I had in the past, I tracked down The Pawnbroker. I'd tracked down The Offense from overseas releases. I have now re-gifted those over Christmas period that we've got this beautiful box set. And maybe we should start from the top of the list. I'll say this, The Pawnbroker. It is my favorite film I watched all of last year.
Whoa.
My favorite discovery. I'd never seen it before. It shot up to number one on my list of discoveries for 2023 within 40 minutes of the movie starting. Like very quickly, I was like, this is an all-timer for me. And dare I say it, it might be my favorite Sidney Lumet film now.
Jeez, that is a huge call. Let's listen to a quick trailer and we'll unpack it for you when the trailer concludes.
Makes you so bitter.
Bitter? I'm a man of no anger. I have no desire for vengeance for what was done to me. I had escaped from the emotions. I am safe within myself. All I ask and want is peace and quiet.
Why haven't you found?
Because people like you will not let me.
I get up in the one that calls a move. And if the thing goes, I say if there be no shooting. Because shooting is trouble. It's stupid.
Thank you.
don't sign the papers, what do you do to me then? You kill me?
So kill me.
It's a chicken business. $2 loan, $5 loan, peanuts.
You think?
Peanuts.
Try $5,000, man. Because I want Mr. Nassim, I must have put in his safe.
Now you open that safe fast. But come on.
To go home. What do you want to die for?
Get out of the way of that safe! Now, Johnny!
All right, Hornbroker, if you're not sure what it's about or you've never heard of it, it's about a World War II Nazi death camp survivor, and he takes refuge in misery and bitter condemnation of humanity while managing a Harlem pawn shop subjected to an endless parade of prostitutes, pimps, and thieves. It stars Rod Steiger, who is a star of In the Heat of the Night, On the Waterfront. It's based on a famous novel by Edward Lewis Wallant. It's directed by Sidney Lumet, of course, and is from 1964. Lex, let's unpack. You said just before we took a quick break to listen to that trailer that it was your favorite discovery of the year, and you said that it only took 40 minutes. And I can reveal to the listener that Lex had said to me, Blake, this is some of the most amazing editing I think I've ever seen in a film. So let's dive into that, because that's so huge for you as a guy who was a massive Serpico guy, a massive Dog Day guy, a massive Lumet guy, and the Pawnbroker just skyrockets up to the top of that list.
Number one, I think it is. The more I think about it, the more I think it's my favorite Lumet film. And it is the editing that I found really fascinating, because to contextualize what The Pawnbroker is, it's been a film that has been on my radar for as long as I've been interested in film. It just has never been very easily available in Australia. And I think there is sometimes when there's like those important films, you just put off watching them.
Yes.
And this film is the
because
first
you want concentration. There's concentration. So many times you look back and you repeat something because you're like, this movie's going to be too good. I can't do the second screen thing. I can't have someone ring my phone. I can't have, you know, I can't be eating dinner while I'm watching it. I need to actually just make the time, watch it in peace and with all of my focus.
And when it comes to Lumet, that's often how I try to do it. And because this film is significant in that it is the first mainstream American film to be about a Holocaust survivor in like overt way, where that is the content of the film, that is the context of the film, that is the character whose life you are experiencing and finding the empathy for and discovering as the film continues. I think that it's a heavy film. It's a very heavy film. So it was hard for me to just go, let me put it on, beyond just trying to track it down and find the movie. The way that this film places you within the Rod Steiger character, into his shoes, into his brain, into his mindset, is sublime editing. There are, within the first few minutes of this film, you see Rod Steiger's character. He's a pawnbroker. He works at a pawn shop, but you see him in like suburban upstate New York or something like that, or like, you know, somewhere in New York, but not the city, it's the suburbs. And you see him just kind of like sitting out in the backyard, and there's a second where something happens, like someone calls his name or something like that. There's something that happens, and you just see a subconscious flash on the screen, flashback for 1 second, where you just see a former life of his for like less than a second. It's so brief. And then as the recollection keeps coming, as he's experiencing his life, he keeps thinking back to this moment, and the flashes get longer and it goes back to a flashback. And that's something that happens throughout the movie. And I just thought, I've never seen technique just like that. And it surprises me because this is a well-known movie and this is such an evocative use of editing technique to bring you into the zone of a character, to bring you into a flashback in a way that you, in a way that is so like when you go to your own recollections. It's a great like evocation of one's own memories. I was like, how have I not seen this 100 times in other movies? Yeah. Surely there's other examples that I must have seen that have learned this technique from this film, have employed it, but nothing came to mind straight away. And I just thought it was just the power of cinema in those moments. And it was more daring than I've seen anything from Lumet before, because Lumet is a brilliant director, but he's kind of a journeyman, but he's also not really an auteur because he's done. But the thing about him is he's a friend to the writer. I always think of him as a friend to the writer. He plays by the written word. A lot of his films are theatrical because of that. Yes. And there's ones in here that I think are that theatrical experience rather than cinematic in a way that I think is good. And I mean that as a compliment. But this to me was pure cinema. And I thought that was a daring use of technique that I'm so not used to with Lumet. And it blew me away. I think the Pawnbroker, I can't say it enough, it's my favorite Lumet film. And I have I have a poster of Serpico on my wall. That's a Japanese release that I tracked down. And I bid big money on it because I wanted it so bad. I love Lumet. The Pawnbroker is so special. And it's been so hard to find. To me, it's worth the entire box to buy for that film. And beyond that, there's other great movies in here as well. Did you catch up with The Pawnbroker as well, Blake?
I did. And I think you put it so beautifully, which is like, it's the kind of intimacy that is usually reserved for like a voiceover narration. And instead,
yes,
it takes you into these immediate flashbacks. And it also takes you in, I think you put it so perfectly, which is like, sometimes a moment in your life, especially if it's a hard moment, a stressful moment, takes you back to maybe a stressful, traumatic moment in your past. And what your first reaction is, and I've heard, you know, great actors talking about it recently, Martin Landau. I saw this great clip of Martin Landau talking about like how he doesn't like people watching people pretend they're drunk. He goes, because when you're drunk, the first thing that you do if you're in real life is that you pretend that you're sober, that you can have more to drink. And I feel like that's what this movie does. It goes like, has a flash to a moment, and Rod Steiger's character, his name is Sol, he immediately dismisses it. He tries to bring himself back to the present. And the increasing trauma of the movie and the increasing events and the acceleration of the story and all the things that are happening, particularly, you know, whether it's him being distracted by Jesus Ortiz, who's his like little office worker, co-worker, played by Jaime Sanchez, or whether it's Rodriguez, who is played by Brock Peters, who's just amazing, this incredible kind of pimp businessman figure. Or his sort of tough relationship with Geraldine Fitzgerald, all this stuff that's happening at the same time in the movie, he's kind of trying to block it out. And what happens is the movie teaches you its language and starts opening the floodgates of all these memories that he does not want to address coming back into his present. He's dragging this all back. And so you're so right. It starts off as these little flashes that he's trying to contain. And the further along the movie goes, as it's going to its crescendo, and I don't want to spoil it for people, but just to say that the editing was just like completely transfixing. And you're so right, Lex. It's like, this is his most dynamically edited thing. And it feels like he's being a friend to the writer, because rather than having this interior dialogue, he's rendering memory flooding back to the character visually. And I think it's so cool. And what I just mentioned before about him being a little bit like Soderbergh is that Soderbergh is sometimes devalued in his like innovation, because he's such a functional filmmaker who loves great scripts and loves working with actors. And he's like, if I can't think of a reason why to not do a two shot, which is like a shot reverse shot of two actors, I won't do it. It has to be a reason in the script, or it has to be something. And I feel like this is the most I've ever felt that those two are alike, because Lumet has clearly looked at the words on the page and gone, the editing is the only way actually into the interior of this character. And so I had such an amazing time with it, and it flew by. It was such a great watch. And I was like, wow, like just, and you know, the funny thing about Rod Steiger is that like, he's usually the guy that gets kind of the piss taken out of him, 'cause he's like the guy who has to act against Marlon Brando and On the Waterfront and be the classic Hollywood actor. And I feel like when he went into the 60s, like he tried to genuinely stretch himself. And so I found this to be a really incredible,
interesting actor.
Incredible performance by him in his sort of later career, as he was sort of taking the third act of his career. So I had a great time. It was excellent. And I think you're spot on. There's like two or three others in here I want to give a big recommend to, but genuinely, if you've never seen The Pawnbroker and you're a Lumet fan, you need to own this box set just for that. There's nothing else you need to know.
Yeah, I agree completely. Beautiful film. Absolutely loved it. I cannot wait to watch it again. I'm going to try and find the script out there too, because I just want to see what the written word is for it. And it's got some wonderful special features on it as well. I was exploring the special features. I think it is, I just can't recommend this set enough. But in particular, The Pawnbroker is one to go for. Blake, what was the next movie in this box set that you dug your little gorgeous teeth into?
The next one is 1972's Child's Play.
Child's Play from 1972 stars James Mason, Robert Preston, and Beau Bridges. At an exclusive boys' school, a new gym teacher is drawn into a feud between two older instructors and discovers that everything at the school is not quite as staid, tranquil, and harmless as it seems. So it's kind of in the grand tradition of films that probably come after it, probably definitely come after it. Of course, I'm thinking about stuff like Dead Poets Society, School Ties, also in imprint collection.
Yes.
And the more recent, The Holdovers. It's a boys' school, a boys' boarding school, which I think is always fertile ground to follow some interesting thematics about men and masculinity. What did Child's Play offer you, Blake?
Child's Play is a weird movie. Beau Bridges, weird actor. James Mason, absolutely chewing the movie's face off, chewing scenery. And it's a suspense film, but it also has this like weird, very weird, like psychological, almost occult feeling, like hypnotic, cultish vibe to the students in the school. And it has this level of hostility with these older teachers and sort of Beau Bridges as a, and I forgive the pun here, but he's literally like a connecting point. He's an intergenerational bridge because he used to be a student at this school. He's coming back to teach. He's like meant to be the kind of young, cool teacher that you would see later on Robin Williams playing something like Dead Poets. And James Mason's the sort of crusty, old, curmudgeon-y teacher that's really hard on his students. But there's a level of hostility that the entire time, and I don't want to spoil the ins and outs of the story, but like there's weird shit going on and these kids are kind of torturing each other, hazing each other. So it has a little bit more in common with, say, School Ties than Dead Poets, but it's got a really hostile feel. And I don't think boarding schools need much work to freak you out. And Sidney Lumet has a great time freaking you out. And I think a lot of people talked about Mason being absolutely terrific in here. And I'm a bit funny on Mason. I can take him or I can leave him.
I love him. He's one of my guys.
I'm glad he is. But in this one, he's really chewing scenery. He's really doing it well. And I think that his hostility and his curmudgeoniness, it really works because it keeps you guessing in this movie as to what it is. Like, what the hell is going on? And I think that that's actually quite comforting in a movie where you're like watching it and there's all this weird stuff happening and there's all this internal strife and conflict with the teachers and there's a lot of politicking going on, so that when you get to the conclusion of the movie, like, you are not ready for it. And so I would say, I don't want to spoil it here, but I will just say, like, I had quite a good time because there's something in a movie, any movie, that you're like watching, you're like, I have no fucking idea where this is going. And I was having a good time watching it. And I think Mason was pretty good in this. It's not my favorite Mason, but I had a good time with this. And again, it just shows Lumet's dexterity. Like, he's making a freaking, like, boarding school, like, weird, odd, occult thrillery kind of thing at the same time as you're about to see, like, a British neo-noir sort of thing. And, you know, and you're about to see, like, this life's, you know, the life and times of a group of friends, you know, a bunch of girls who went to school together, you know, in the interwar period, you know, like, so, yeah, I had a really good time with this. You got to sort of check this one out sort of passively. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't really get the chance to focus on it. I was too busy, but I was like, oh, I want to squeeze one more Lumet in. So I kind of had it on the background while I was doing some work. It's an interesting one, but I think it's something that I've come up almost every time I've talked about these kind of boys' boarding school movies. It's so far removed from my experience.
Same.
And I think I find, like, a lot of the time when I watch movies set in a world of teenagers, I often want to find that reflective point in them.
Yeah.
And this one, I couldn't quite find my way in. So in that case, I do think it demands another watch from me. Like, it's a Lumet film. I got to try and watch it again with more focus, and I will be doing so soon. There's one film in this box set that I'd love to move on to because I don't think I'd ever even heard of it.
I'd never heard of it.
I find this film, like, such a bizarre entry into the filmography of Lumet, and I want to explore further, and there's a audio commentary on here that I know that I'll listen to. I might even listen to it on the first watch. I'm of course speaking about The Group, which is a rare film for Sidney Lumet because it is about a group of women in between the two, First World War and Second World War, right?
Yep.
And it's based on a novel by Mary MacArthur. And it's the rare movie of Sidney Lumet because his films are so always about men. Like, there are the films about men, about masculinity for a lot of it, but in a really, like, intellectual way, I'd say his films are. So I found this, like, what an oddity that he made this movie about a group of young career-minded women, a group of female friends, based on a book by a woman as well. I think I read somewhere that, like, Pauline Kael was, like, on set, like, and wrote a lot about this movie, and it just seemed like it was not, it's a film that does not have a good critical response or good critical legacy, I would say, but I have not had a chance to watch it. Did you watch this one, Blake?
It has one of the greatest female casts I've ever seen, though. It's like, it's got Candace Bergen, Joan Hackett, Elizabeth Hartman, like, Jessica Walter, like, some of these names that I'm saying you're hearing, like, love Jessica Walter too, like, amazing cast. And essentially it's about a group of friends who are all friends at, like, university together in the very traditional way of their time. They're all, like, getting married off and things like that. And basically it's all these sort of dysfunctional relationships and how they come together, are torn apart and then come back together again. And it's weird, man. Like, I was watching it and I was really interested just the original makeup of the movie and this sort of meet cutes and how they're, you know, all the societal sort of trimmings that you would expect of the time. But I didn't like this one. it might come as a shock to you that, like, a film about eight friends in the 1930s who all have to get married and, like, you know, all those sorts of things. But it was semi-controversial actually the novel was, because the novel confronted certain topics and things that were, like, taboo at the time, which is, like, you know, being gay and the idea of contraception and, you know, mental illness and things like that, that were, you know, happening amongst its characters. But by the time this movie's being made, like, it's being made, and I'll just confirm the date, it's like 1966. So these are topics du jour. And I think it's one of those movies that's trying to say, like, oh, you know, we had these same problems, you know, earlier. And, you know, there were women who were our forebears as far as these kind of, like, political ideals and et cetera. But it just doesn't, like, it doesn't really land. Like, it just doesn't feel like it tracks. And it's one of those things where maybe it is Lumet's, like, gaze that he's not a woman and knowing how this all works. It is very functional. You know, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of emotion. So it didn't really have me emotional. The male characters, funnily enough, like the douchebag husbands that all these women are with are kind of more interesting. But I do want to watch it again, or at least put it on, because it does have an audio commentary by Adrian Martin. Which
yeah,
is,
that's what I'm interested in, because
that's what I'm interested in too.
Yeah, I really like Adrian Martin's work a lot, and I love his audio commentaries from back in the director's suite days of physical media. But just because this film seems like I've yet to see it, so I'm prejudging it, the wrong person for the job.
Yeah, big time. Yeah.
It just doesn't feel like Lumet is up to this kind of material. Everything that I've heard and read about it seems to say that since then, since discovering it even exists. And the Pauline Kael piece, it's in her book, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. You can read it.
I've got it.
But it is, yeah, about the making of this film. And I really, really want to read that. So I think I've got a copy of that book. I might just read that and then watch the movie. Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. Lumet, a nice departure for him. Interesting. Yeah. There's another movie in here.
Can we just say, guys, I think we can say comfortably, we're going to skip Serpico, because it's pretty self-evident, despite me baiting Lex with the wrong quote for the movie at the beginning of the podcast, that like, this is an incredible film, and it's like a seminal film of the 1970s, a seminal film in Al Pacino's career, a seminal like cop film. It's like a genre buster. Like once they made Serpico, you couldn't make a cop movie that didn't contend with Serpico for like the next two decades. It's impossible. And Pacino's
They still are.
They're still trying to do even something like Serpico, and they have to, and it's now in the cultural lexicon. So we're going to skip it. And suffice it to say, you probably already own it. You might already do that. And in the box set, you're just getting a beautiful Blu-ray, you know, from the 2K scan version of this thing. So that's what it's worth getting. And there's another disc about a Lumet documentary that's on there about his entire career in television and how crazy that was leading up to that. So that's great. But let's talk about this one, because I had never seen this one. And this was a fascinating one for me, because in the lead is the ultra tough man's man, impervious James Bond, legendary Sean Connery, in a thrilling neo-noir, a British film, which for Lumet fans is like, wait, he's not making a movie in New York. What the hell's going on? It is called The Offense. Also, crazily, in his insane run, released in 1973. Here's a trailer. A burnt-out British detective finally snaps while interrogating a suspected child molester. That detective is played by Sean Connery. His character is Detective Sergeant Johnson. He's been an officer for like 20 years. The film begins with this act where he beats a suspect, and there's sort of like a revolving few different techniques of different flashbacks that occur. And it is then trying to piece the pieces of his life after the events and to reconstruct what happened that led him to that, because he's a super passionate cop. He's been trying to protect the community from this child predator, And you can see that he's lost his temper, but it's like, how did he get to this point where he actually lost it, even though he's kind of quite a curmudgeon-y sort of cop in the first place? Lex, had you seen The Offence before? Is this your first time? And I'd be really keen to hear your thoughts on like checking it out recently.
Yeah, this was my first time with The Offence. It's a film that I'd read a lot about, but it was hard to come across in Australia as well.
Yes.
So it was the one that I jumped on right after The Pawnbroker. I think I watched them in the same weekend or something. Yeah. It's a very, very bleak movie. It's a very, very bleak Huge. Movie. And it's an interesting casting of Sean Connery. And it's another movie that Lumet made with Connery. It's escaping me now. But something that's interesting about the way he casts Connery is when we think about Connery, especially like 60s, 70s, we think about James Bond. We think about a very suave hero. Lumet casts him against type every time. Yes. And in this film, he's so far removed from his suave hero, James Bond. He doesn't even look like him. Like, he's not wearing his toupee. He's bald in this movie. He seems a lot older than he was in this era, or how you even think about him in the early 70s. And he plays someone so conflicted, and there's so much ambiguity in this. Like, does he feel guilty when he's beating this pedophile up because he's harboring feelings of this, you know, is perhaps he also a guilty party in pedophilia, or does he have those deep feelings recessed within him, kind of? It's a very interesting movie, and I think I would note to this is Lumet has adapted a few plays and stuff, and especially his TV era is very much in that type as well. And like, you know, the TV plays before they were like TV shows, they were TV plays, and Lumet worked in that. And when he does, you can tell that it's a play. And I think this is one of those where it feels so much like a theatrical experience rather than a cinematic one. It does tricks to be both, but it's because it's so dialogue driven and so small space driven. For a lot of it, you're kind of in two confined spaces for a lot of this movie. It feels very much like you're trapped in there.
I think the moments that you're talking about that I really love what you said. I love that Connery is so against type. It was surprised and shocked me watching it because he was such a star at that time that I guess, I don't know whether it's like movie lore or just bullshit that you learn, but like that his ego would not allow him to just be such a conflicted character. Like he wanted just to maintain his star power. And I love that about this, that he doesn't. And then the other cool thing that you said was, I actually think that the moments that this breaks from the confines of being this sort of very claustrophobic play-like text, and there's one scene in particular where a girl goes missing and the camera is sort of anchored in a very sort of surveillance but like locked off moment, and it sees her walking down to this sort of very ominous underpass in the distance, and you see a man whose identity is not revealed at the time, taking her there, this abductor. And some of those moments in this movie, those things, especially another great shot of like, Connery's character, Sergeant Johnson, following a criminal informant to get some more information about another, you know, about someone to take in another suspect, you know, when it actually is outside, I think that that's where it's like, it's actually terrifying. Like it reminded me a little bit of like Denis Villeneuve's Prisoners and stuff like that, where you're like looking far in the distance and there's like suspects are around everywhere and people are all acting suspiciously. But it was like, it was dank and it was dark and it never felt like the sun was going to shine. It was bleak. It had a lot of those keystones, those touchstones. And so I really enjoyed this at, largely because I'm such an incredibly huge James Bond fan and I've seen all of Sean Connery's stuff and all of the big ticket items that are in his career, that I'd never seen this and I'd never seen him surrender to something so, you know, so something so kind of like ambivalent. It was really nice to see that because you're like, yeah, he's a fantastic actor. He's been in Hitchcock stuff. He's, you know, he's been in De Palma stuff and won Academy Awards with De Palma, and it's not all just like flash and fluff. He's not always just like popping up in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves for 3 minutes, you know, like it's, you know, there's so many great things in his career. Or Zardoz. A big fan of that. But yeah, I really liked this for him as an actor. And it is not a fun hang. It's not something I'm going to race back to, but I think it's another worthwhile sort of gem in the Lumette box.
And I would say this, they have made five films together in total. The Anderson Tapes, Family Business, which I have seen, The Hill, and of course, Murder on the Orient Express. Another one that I've seen, but not for a very long time. And he uses him very interestingly, and it's kind of, it's something I never think of. They've had multiple collaborations. It's a pair of filmmaker
is
and
that
actor.
Is that his most collaborations with another filmmaker?
I mean, off the top of my head, it might be for both of them most.
Yeah. Wow.
And you never think about them as an actor-director pairing. Never. I've never once thought about them.
That's awesome.
This is volume one. Volume two, hopefully there's a few more in there. There are many treasures still left in this box for us to uncover. Documentaries about Sidney Lumet's filmography, analyzing his work, looking at
I did watch the Becoming Lumet documentary, which is unbelievable. Like just watching the early days of television and teleplays and watching how many shows he worked on. And when you look at how much of a craftsman and a filmmaker that he is, ultimately it's like, The reps that he did in television, shooting things live, shooting live plays, doing all that sort of stuff. It's actually incredible. So it's really intimidating. It's really intimidating, to be genuine. It's like, oh my God. But it's a really terrific and enlightening thing that I never knew anything about Lumet. So it was it was awesome.
Well, we certainly do love you, Sidney Lumet. We anticipate volume two eventually coming out. And I can't even imagine what will be in there because he was a very prolific man. He made a lot of freaking movies his career. And already Night Falls on Manhattan has been released. So it's going to be some interesting stuff in there. I'm hoping another Connery to boot to follow on from The Offense.
Can we play a guessing game? We've never done this before. This is 9 years, 64 to 73. So I'm going to bounce down to 1974. And just go up the same sort of years. So we've got 74, we've got Love
Murder
and Molly,
on the Orient Express,
Murder
right?
on the Orient Express, Dog Day Afternoon, Network, Equus, The Wiz, Just Tell Me What You Want, Prince of the City, Death Trap, The Verdict, Daniel, and that's 80 up to 83.
Wow, okay.
So in that patch, Verdict, Prince of, like, these are the biggies. Verdict, Prince of the City, Network, Dog Day, ones. Murder on the Orient Express. They're massive movies. All of them were massive, and some of them were Academy Award nominated to boot. So an incredible purple patch in his career right then.
I'm thinking I would love to see Murder on the Orient Express come through on this one. And on the next one would be very interesting. I feel like Dog Day, Network, they're very big. People have seen those.
They might, but I think they might try and chuck one in. And if I think they do, I hope it's Network because Dog Day seems to have more of its own unique individual releases. So I hope if they're going to do that, I would love The Wiz. I would love The Wiz to come out. Like that would be great. And Prince of the City deserves a good a local Blu-ray release, you know.
I'd say that's one that I imported. So please don't put that one. I've already spent money on it.
Death Trap.
I don't need it again.
Death Trap.
Definitely I would love to see that in there.
Death Trap, let's get that.
Equus, I'd love to see as well. Yeah, true. I don't know, man. There's a 90s one that I've never seen that I've always wanted to because it is from the writer of Carlito's Way, Edwin Torres, called Q&A with Nick Nolte and Timothy Hutton and Amanda Sante.
I've never seen it either.
Yeah, it's because the author of Carlito's Way and After Hours, those two books about Carlito Brigante, he was a judge. And that Q&A is another book that he wrote. And I've just always been like, I've always wanted to read the books and I've always wanted to see those movies too.
And late 80s is good too. You've got like Running on Empty with River Phoenix.
I like that movie a lot.
And then, so we already had Night Falls in Manhattan. And then he's kind of like directing TV, like his last, I mean, he does All the Devil Knows You're Dead, but he's got Gloria with Sharon Stone.
Oh, Weird, the remake of the weird John Cassavetes film.
Weird remake.
It is a weird make.
Weird make.
But I got a soft spot for Find Me Guilty, and I think Lumet might be in consideration for the one of the best final films from a filmmaker, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. I think it's one of his best movies, and it's very rare when you see a filmmaker go out on something that high quality that speaks to so much of their previous work as well.
It's that and Unstoppable, mate. It's a heavyweight championship between Before the Devil Knows You're Dead and Unstoppable, the best film that the filmmaker makes one of the high quality best movies as their last film. It's so, so rare. You're so right. Guys, thank you. We've just natted on. We've had such a fun time talking Sydney Lumet. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to catch you on another episode of The Imprint Companion very soon. Lex, is there any last minute plugs that you want to do while we are chatting now, sir, that get people excited to listen to you elsewhere outside of The Imprint Companion?
Check out Special Features. I am cooking up a new podcast project as well that I'm very looking forward to this year. But my main thing I'd love to push people towards is Sunburnt Screens, the Australian Cinema Odyssey. It is an introduction to Australian film that I've been making over the last few months with Umbrella Films, Broly, and DM Media. I'm really proud of it. It's just like, if you want to get into Australian film and you want an access point, this is it for you. Made great episodes about they're kind of like audio documentaries, I'd say, where it's like lots of interviews, interesting topics, great experts, but great filmmakers. And I've done episodes about Australian horror cinema in the 21st century. I've done episodes about queer cinema in Australia, Ausploitation with Brian Trenchard-Smith. And I'll tee up what we're doing next. I've got two big career retrospectives with two of our greatest filmmakers that I'm editing at the moment. Oof. One with Rolf de Heer and one with Gillian Armstrong. Two of my very favorite filmmakers. I got to sit with them for a very long time. They were very generous with how much they spoke to me, and cutting them into some really beautiful episodes for you guys. So check it out. Sunburnt Screens, the Australian Cinema Odyssey. And Blake, what are you working on at the moment? What do you want to push people towards?
Midnight Run Through is a collaboration I'm doing with my great friend Jen Johans of the Watch with Jen podcast. We are doing a 12-episode series on Midnight Run, 1988 flick by Marty Brest, written by George Gallo, starring two of our guys, Charles Grodin, Robert De Niro. One of the funniest action comedy movies ever made.
Agree.
Hilarious. It is heartfelt. It is infinitely rewatchable. And we have just had such a joyful time talking to so many wonderful dynamic duos. We do have a single person episode. That's because the legendary George Gallo came and talked to Jen and I. Wow. It's going to be one of our final episodes of the series. Yeah, we've had amazing guests besides George Gallo. We've had Drew McWeeny, the great writer and film critic for a long time. Ben David Grabinski, one of the co-creators of the terrific Scott Pilgrim Takes Off series. Crime authors Jedediah Ayres and Nikki Dolson. A legend in the biz, TCM's Ben Mankiewicz. And Alan Sepinwall, one of the great chroniclers of TV and one of the greatest fans of Midnight Run, and two other fantastic critical writers, Nell Minow and Peter Avellino. That is just the first four episodes that are out as I am talking to you. Plenty more to come with some other amazing guests, including George Gallo. So that is a big one for us right now. And I just want to tease, whenever I do an announcement of a new show, the next mini series we're working on over at One Heat Minute Productions is Too Many Minutes, a sneakers miniseries with some incredible guests that are going to be coming on the show, including Bill Arden Robinson, the director and co-writer of Sneakers as well.
So Sneakers, great movie. One of the recommendations from Blake unto me that I had not seen before, and I loved it. A great time with Sneakers.
So lots of cool stuff coming up. But yeah, I think Lex and I, when we're not doing projects outside of each other, we're talking about the projects that we're doing to each other. So it's been super cool. But look, thank you guys for listening. We love doing this show. Thank you to Imprint Films. We love what they're doing. We will catch you on the next episode. We're going to split up December batch and get talking about the Feb batch. So don't miss it.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save